happy to welcome Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated. Richard, thanks for being with us. And I know you wrote about Tony Romo and CBS today. How quickly, because for us it felt like it happened really fast, but how quickly did this deal come together?
Well, first of all, thanks for the invite, guys. These things don't happen particularly quickly. It's a long process in terms of the romance between a network and an athlete. So you have to sort of think in long term in terms of, you know, CBS is looking for people every time they have a game and every time they have production meetings with current athletes, current coaches. So over the years, Romo was somebody that had impressed them in those production meetings. And then, you know, things really start to sort of come into fruition over this last current season. Romo has an agent, CAA agent, who specializes in television deals. So, you know, whether the formal negotiations didn't start until after the season, it's very clear that Romo has people letting, you know, CBS and Fox and NBC know that, hey, if Tony doesn't come back, he's going to be very, very interested in doing broadcasting this year. And so that's sort of how the wheels get in motion. And then in terms of, you know, the really kind of hardcore specific negotiations, those probably happened after the season ended, and, you know, the networks were very clear that Romo was indeed going to be a broadcaster. But it's you know, these things don't just happen overnight. There's sort of a long process of a network being interested and the athlete or coach's representation, you know, sort of making inroads into, you know, having a deal like this get done. And this is a particularly big deal, of course, because this isn't just an ordinary spot Tony Romo's going in. Tony Romo's going into, you know, one of the four preeminent analyst jobs in the NFL. This is a 1A job, they call it.
Yeah, and kind of with that, we've speculated on how he'll do. You already said, you know, when he gets these other interviews and preps for games, people have been impressed by him. But, Richard, how do you think he will do right away, put in that big spot with Jim Nantz?
It's honestly impossible to know. It's a very, very big job. Tony Romo's a bright guy, and I don't doubt that he'll do his preparation, but you honestly don't know until the light comes on what your chemistry is going to be like with Jim Nantz. How quickly are you going to just sort of get used to the mechanics of TV? Can you produce cogent thoughts in a certain amount of time? You know, there's a lot of people who are good talkers, but you got to do it within a certain time frame between plays, you know, sort of after turnovers or after possession. And then lastly, and it's sort of an important one, is one of the reasons CBS hired Tony Romo is because he has, you know, what they would call currency. He's connected to the game. He will have played against, you know, 80 to 90% of the players who are in the league. So there's value there, you know, compared to somebody like Aikman or Collinsworth. They've been long out of the league. But the converse is, that means Tony Romo has relationships in the league, and he certainly has relationships with the Cowboys. So the question's going to be, how critical can Tony Romo be of players he played against? How critical can he be of coaches who coached him? How critical can he be of players who he played with? What is he telling the audience? What is he not telling the audience? Chris Collinsworth, a long time ago, told me that he felt he became an analyst when he thought of himself finally as a broadcaster first and a former player second. So that, to me, is always sort of the line is, you know, when and if will Romo think that way? It will be tough. He will not be, in my opinion, a great broadcaster the first year, just because I think it's very hard to be great in year one. But if he improves each game, and if he sort of incrementally gets better, and if he works at it, you know, he's got a chance to be good. He's a bright guy who had a great football career and played for a team that is, you know, arguably the biggest media team in the NFL. So he's got a lot of things sort of that he's coming in with that would suggest that he could be good.
Hey, Richard, you know, I was looking at your article on SI.com talking about this whole thing and kind of how it went down. And one of the things that struck me, and I kind of felt this was out there, CBS Sports Chairman Sean McManus, initially all of his support behind Phil Simms. And then here they are, as you mentioned in your article, 7 months later. And now he's being moved over to some other position. Can you tell me, did they tell Phil beforehand, and do you know how Phil Simms reacted to all of this?
What are you saying, that a television executive fell in love with someone one day and then fell out of love the next?
I know, it's crazy, right?
Is that possible that happens in television? Well, I don't know what he said to Phil specifically. And McManus is, generally speaking, a pretty straight-up guy. I would think he called Phil. I don't think he he did where he called his agent or something like that and let him know. I don't know what Phil's reaction is, but I think you can guess. I'm sure Phil's not happy. You know, you're the number one guy at a network for 20-something years. Your bosses over the last couple of years have said to reporters like myself when we've asked them about all the social media complaints that Phil has gotten, that they don't listen to that stuff and that Phil's work has been great and that he had a great Super Bowl, blah, 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 blah. So it's pretty clear, I think, that either they're certainly aware of, they have been aware of the criticism of Phil, which you never really honestly know is internally how is he viewed. I think they needed an upgrade at the number one position. I think Phil Simms is certainly good enough to still call games for a number three or number four team. But if you compare him to Collinsworth and Aikman, I'm not the biggest Gruden fan, but you can even throw Gruden in there. He was clearly the fourth guy in terms of the top analyst right now in the NFL, at least the top job. So I think they could have used an upgrade. The question is, of course, is Tony Romo going to be the right guy for that upgrade? But there's no doubt that, you know, if you're Simms, you know, nobody likes getting demoted. It's a public kind of demotion. If Phil was smart, and we will see what he does, but if he's smart, he should approach it the way guys like Brent Musburger and Vern Lundquist have done. You take the job, even if you get demoted, you keep working, because the goal is to always work. And if you're Phil and you sort of handle this right, you got another 5 to 10 years of doing games. Now, you may never get back to the number one job, but if you have the number three or number four job on a network like CBS or Fox, you know, you're making probably high six or seven figures, and that's a pretty nice life. You know, you travel first class, high style. You're only working essentially a couple days a week. So if he plays it right, he's going to be working for the next 10 years. The way to play it wrong, of course, is to, you know, go public with how pissed off you are, start leaking stuff to people like me through your agents to say X. That would be the wrong way to do it. So we'll see how Phil reacts.
Richard Deitch, Sports Illustrated, with us here on the Lowdown. Richard, I have a rather intimate knowledge of them, and you mentioned them earlier, and that's CAA. They're kind of the giants when it comes to the sports media world. How much influence did they have in this getting done?
I'd like to know about your intimate knowledge. Screw what I have.
I think you're aware of the knowledge that I have, and I'm sure you're aware of things that I'm not even aware of yet.
Probably true. They are a massive agency in the entertainment world, and they have a gigantic sports division. And within that sports division, they represent, you know, 50 broadcasters, 50 media people to 100 media. I don't know what their exact client list is, but it's big, and it's named people. And so they were absolutely massive in this. Like I said, this doesn't start the day after Tony Romo finishes his regular season. This stuff is sort of all being, you know, the way you do it is your representatives meet with people like Sean McManus or his assistants, and you sort of let them know that, you know, you have this guy, Tony Romo. He's really thinking seriously about broadcasting. What kind of, you know, possibilities can exist? What kind of salary are we talking about? Here's what Tony can do for you. So the agency game is really about what kind of relationships does the agent have with the networks, and can the agent ultimately get things into a place where they could deliver you a really great job for really good money, really good opportunity. So CAA absolutely had a lot to do with it. Now, all that being said, Tony Romo is famous enough where if he, and most people don't do this, but if Tony Romo really wanted to be so proactive and decided, hey, I'm not going to use an agent, I'm going to sort of use my own viewpoint here and make a call to CBS, fly myself to New York and meet with Sean McMath, he could have done all that on his own. But, you know, the agents deal with these television people every day, and that's why you connect with them and that's why you pay them. But it's not cheap. You know, Tony's going to end up paying the CAA person 10%, and that's going to be 10% of millions of dollars. But, you know, at the same time, the agent can say, and rightly so, hey, I took a guy who literally just walked off the field, and I got him one of the four best jobs that he could get. So that's a great job by, you know, It pains me sometimes to praise agents, but I would praise the agent in this case. That's a great job by the agent to deliver a client one of the best jobs out there.
You sound like Ken. Yeah. Don't want to praise the agent.
I praise mine.
No one should ever want to praise the agent.
Mine's awesome. Everyone else's is horrible.
Richard, how about
Ken? I don't know who Ken's agent is, but I know that he's already drinking the Kool-Aid way too much. But that's
Richard, how about Jim Nance's role in this? Because he's obviously still going to be the number one guy. He not only had a partnership with Phil Simms, but I'm sure a friendship over years. What do you think his reaction to all this is now, having another new partner?
The beautiful azaleas of Augusta.
Hello, friends.
That's what his reaction is. I haven't talked to Nance. I don't know if he will sort of ever sort of say what he really feels, but my guess is it would be a little mixed. I think probably professionally and personally, he is a little, how do I sort of phrase it? You know, he's saddened by the fact that the relationship that he built up with Phil for a long time is over, and that Phil's not going to be part of the traveling committee and stuff. But I have to believe somewhere in the back of Nance's mind, he had to know that Phil had dropped a little bit, and that if he got a new analyst, one, it sort of is kind of exciting and gives you a chance for a new start, and two, you know, this makes Nance a very senior person in that booth. It enhances Nance's value to CBS. Not that Jim Nance isn't going anywhere, or not that they don't think of him as their number one, but, you know, so much of the conversation yesterday with Tony Romo on the conference call and the executives were talking about how, you know, Jim Nance is going to be a great figure in the booth for Tony. Romo said himself, you know, the opportunity to work with Jim Nance is one of the reasons I wanted this. So for Jim Nance, this puts him in a, you know, gives him a ton of leverage in terms of he's going to be, you know, a very big part of Tony Romo's maturation process. So, again, not that Nance was going anywhere, but for a guy who had a lot of leverage, he just gained more.
You know, Richard, there's one thing about this process that's really, really confusing to me, because we're all in this business, and I have an agent. But I have yet to get a job without one of two things happening, if not both. One, my resume tape is sent in, and then two, I have to come in and audition. I have not received any job in my life without an audition. Now, I know you said that they're previewing players and they're kind of feeling them out during the session when they're talking to them about the game, but do you have any intel? Did they have him do any kind of audition where they could get a feel for his voice and his presence on the air?
None, no. And I say this with due respect to you. You're not the former quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. You're not a guy with the Q rating that Romo has, and that's leverage. That's the leverage game, in that Romo can deliver to them, in theory, doesn't mean it's reality, but in theory, relevancy, currency, potentially new eyeballs, and not to mention the fact that he would have multiple networks interested in him. So if you're Tony Romo, you don't have to audition. You know, you play it, and this is where the CAA guys would come in, you play it as, you know, if you want me, you sort of give me what I want. I don't have to go in sight unseen and interview for the job. But here's where I totally agree with you. In life, that's an insane way to do a business. The thing you should do, of course, is to go in and to go in a studio and to do a mock game. And CBS should sort of get a sense of, okay, how is Romo, his, you know, potentially could be, and is this something we could work with? That would be the logical thing to do, but no, that doesn't happen. What they judge it on is they judge it on how Romo came off in interviews with the press in Dallas and nationally, how he was in these production meetings, and how he was when he talked to CBS executives in either like a party or one-on-one setting. Ken, if you're sort of inferring that that's insane, I'm with you. Like most jobs, you should come in and perform that job before I give you $5 million a year. But that is not how sports television works when you have leverage like a Peyton Manning or a Tony Romo, or let's say in the NBA, if somebody like Kobe Bryant was going to come in to do a studio job or an analyst job.
Hey, Richard, is this the same as Dennis Miller, Eric Dickerson, Tony Kornheiser, and Monday Night Football? Which, by the way, almost completely buried Monday Night Football when they made those hires, among others that were huge mistakes. Is this kind of the same as that, where they're just kind of banking on, hey, you've got this Q rating and you've got this appeal, just go out there and talk sports?
Yeah, the one thing I would say is, don't quote me on this, but I believe that Kornheiser actually did a mock game before they made that decision.
Okay.
Dickerson, no way. The sideline people, no. I don't know if Eric Dickerson had done sideline reporting before he was on Monday Night Football. My sense is, given his performance, no, but maybe
no, yeah.
he did a college game or something like that. But, yeah, like, the more famous you are, the less you have to do to get a job in sports television. I'll give you, like, an example. Like, ESPN hired Rex Ryan to do NFL Countdown with essentially one audition. He came on in a Sunday for the playoffs and did, like, you know, 2 hours worth of work. He was probably on screen for a total of, I'm going to take a guess and say 13 minutes tops. And they just hired him to do their biggest pregame show. That there is essentially no body of work, but the at least on television, but what these TV executives would say is, we've seen Rex at the podium for 10 years. We've seen him do radio interviews. We've seen him on Hard Knocks. And that's, you know, we're going to base it on that. But this is where, like, TV is an interesting business and where so often producers get it wrong. You would have thought if you watched the NFL films of Ray Lewis, like, on the sideline, exhorting his teammates on with fire and brimstone, the guy came off like a preacher. You're like, this guy cannot miss on television. He's going to be incredibly compelling theater. ESPN hires Ray Lewis. What happens? He's the opposite of compelling theater, yeah. And now he's working at FS1. So it's not always – there's no sure things, and I think a lot of times the way networks make these judgments on, you know, what they think is sort of a resume turns out not indeed to be a resume, and I'm filibustering here, but it's my last one. So often, and Damien would know this, people who you never expect to be great on TV turn out to be great because they do the prep and they're really good. Case in point in the NFL, Louis Riddick. No, basically, a journeyman NFL player at best, was a personnel director, got a tryout at ESPN on a weekend, did a pretty good job, sort of slowly but surely, got more airtime there. He, in my opinion, is now their best NFL person far and away, and that is a guy who has no stardom the way Tony Romo does.
And to tie those two together, the two names you just mentioned, Ray Lewis wouldn't do the draft, I think, because of his son's football game or something along those lines, or he couldn't get there. They throw Louis Riddick in there, and suddenly they're like, oh, my gosh, look what we have here with him.
Right. I'm someone who, and I've written about this a lot, I think networks fall way in love with big names and sort of the hype of a potential hire, as opposed to someone who really could be great on actual performance. Like, somebody comes in and just knocks it out of the park, but they're not, you know, they're not famous athlete or famous coach X. Too often, the only way we find a Louis Riddick is if they get lucky with an opportunity. Somebody, certainly Damien knows, like, Doris Burke is a perfect example of that. She was working for MSG Network. She did, like, one or a couple of WNBA Liberty games. Somebody at ESPN saw her, put her on, like, the lowest level women's basketball game. She did those for a couple of years, turned out to be pretty good, finally got some bigger opportunities, and eventually grinded her way up to the top. But, you know, those are it's so rare for someone who doesn't have a name to even get in the door that way. And I am one who believes that there are great people around the country who are far better than the national people we see, but they just never got that break because they were, you know, they didn't walk in the door with the name.
And Doris just finished up her final women's Final Four. She's focusing now solely on is it just the NBA or is it the NBA and men's college basketball as well?
I think it'll be both. And, you know, as someone who covers women's college basketball, that bums me out. But I understand there's far more money to be done and to be made in the NBA and men's college basketball. And if you're Doris Burke and people in the business, you want to be moving forward. So at a certain point, if it's not the NFL, let's say, or not the NBA or MLB, whatever your sort of big four sport is, you don't want to be characterized always as just a women's basketball person or just a tennis person. You want to, you know, at a place like ESPN, you got to try to be moving towards the biggest sport or your biggest sport. And so while I think the sport will miss her, I understand why she did that. And if I were her agent, per se, I would have done the same thing. The NBA, ESPN's going to have the NBA for a long time. That's where more eyeballs are compared to women's basketball. And so, you know, to just sort of protect your career, that's where you head. And she's an excellent game analyst. And I give ESPN a lot of credit. You know, again, not every analyst who does the NBA has to be a former all-star. You know, Doris Burke is a better analyst than Reggie Miller, and Reggie Miller was a much better basketball player than Doris Burke.
But it doesn't hurt to be a former All-Star and Olympic gold medalist as well. I'm just going to throw that out there, Richard. I'm just saying, like, it doesn't hurt. Maybe it doesn't necessarily matter, but it doesn't hurt.
No, it does not. Not only does it not hurt, it gets you that initial interview. So.
Richard, how much of the 7.5-hour WrestleMania did you watch before we let you go?
Well, being that I was in Dallas covering South Carolina's victory that night, not much. I had to backplay it, basically. I had to
lucky you
check out some clips after the fact. I heard it was not as good as maybe it wasn't going to be anticipated to be great, but I heard it was a little bit of a letdown if you took it as a large program. I heard it was not as great as some of the other WrestleMania.
It was it was just really, really long. It had the memorable moments of the Hardys returning, and then I think was like a 13-minute goodbye to the Undertaker, which
right,
you know, the
yeah.
camera
I
caught.
I did see that. I saw that match. That the only thing longer than that Undertaker Roman Reigns match was you guys might be a little too young, but the Roots. Remember the Roots miniseries?
Yeah.
Alex Bailey was on for like 5 years. Literally, that's how long that Roman Reigns Undertaker match was.
And it was brutal. It was so brutal to watch. But the big ending was the walk off and all that went along with it. Richard, we always appreciate you, my man. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time.
You got it. Thanks for the invite.
All right, that is Richard Deitch, the Sports Illustrated media critic. He is so well connected industry. There are a million things that you could talk about with that guy on a weekly basis, just because so much filters through him.
Yeah.